Okay, today's daf is Bava Basra, daf Mem Dalet. We are holding on the very top of Mem Dalet Amar Aleph, or right around there, on the bottom of Mem Gimel and Beis. We're discussing a brisa that drew a distinction between karka on the one hand versus metaltalin on the other hand. The brisa had said that if a person sells karka or a bayis, a sada, something like that, he's not allowed to be meyid about it, since achrius olav, he's considered to be a nogea be'edus, he cannot testify that it belongs to the person who he sold it to. However, when it comes to a talis, a para, something that's metaltalin, he's allowed to be meyid about it, since ein achrius olav, he has no achrius for it. So yesterday we saw the shita of Rav Sheshes, who explains that the case was that Reuven had stolen a field from Shimon, and then Reuven sold it to Levi, and Yehuda's claiming, hey, this is my field the whole time. So the question was, can Shimon testify that no, it is not Yehuda's field, and testify that it is Levi's field? But it's definitely not Levi's. Shimon certainly doesn't believe it's Levi's field. Shimon believes it's his own field. His reason for testifying was that if he's not even the Marakama, then he's not going to be able to claim the field back. So that was the case that Rav Sheshes said the Brisa was actually talking about. So today we're going to suggest alternative understandings of the Brisa. Why is it that Rav Sheshes specifically understood such a convoluted case? Why didn't he have a more direct case? Why not understand that the Brisa is talking about a regular case of Gazlan without a Shina Rishas, without the Gazlan then going and selling it? Why not say that the Brisa is talking about a case of Yoresh? Why do we have to have such a strange case? And in the context of discussing what else the Brisa could have been talking about, we're going to get into a conversation about Yeyush and Shinei Rishus, and we're going to get into a discussion about Rishus Yoresh, K'Rishus Lokeach, how these things work when something is stolen, when something is Yarshin, since those are going to be the suggestions of what the Brisa should have been talking about or could have been talking about. Then the Gemara is going to discuss the other half of the Brisa, the part about the metaltalim. Can there be a shibud on metaltalim? What would be situations where there in fact is a shibud on metaltalim? The whole idea of the Brisa was that you're allowed to be made on metaltalim because ein achrius olav. But when is that not so? What about an aputiki? So that's going to be the discussion on Amud Beis. So let's begin. The Gemara is going to start on the I think we read down to the bottom yesterday on the top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, that why don't we say that the Brisa is talking about a gazlan? Rav Sheshes said that the Brisa was talking about a gazlan, but specifically a gazlan who stole the field and then sold the field. So the nigzal is not allowed to be made for the lokeach, the guy who bought the field, because the nigzal is nogea be'edus. So again, the case was, just to put the names to it that the Gemara used, Reuven stole the field from Shimon. Shimon was the original owner. Reuven stole the field from Shimon, sold it to Levi, and now Yehuda is coming and making a claim that the field really belongs to him. So the halacha is that Shimon, who is the original owner, may not testify that the field really belongs to Levi and not to Yehuda, because he's considered to be nogea be'edus. So we had the discussion yesterday. Why is he nogea be'edus? Once Shimon testifies that it belongs to Levi, there's no way he's going to be able to show up to court the next day and say, oh no, it belongs to me, not to Levi, and I want to take it away from Levi. So the Gemara said, no, he wasn't testifying that it belongs to Levi, he was testifying that it does not belong to Yehuda. That was his point, that it should not go to Yehuda. But either way, asks the Gemara, V'lokma b'gazlan, why doesn't the Brisa just say the din in a less complicated case, where the field is in the hands of the gazlan himself, that Reuven, who stole the field, still has it? Why do we have to bring Levi into the picture at all? So why does the Brisa have to come up with this docha case that the gazlan sold the field to somebody else? The same din would be shayach if the gazlan never sold the field to somebody else. The gazlan is still holding on to the field. Reuven still has the field, and Yehuda comes in as ma'arer that the sada doesn't belong to him. The din would still be that Shimon, the nigzal, cannot be made for Reuven, the gazlan, that the field should stay by him, since he's no gabadover. He wants the field to stay by Reuven and not to go to Yehuda, who is being ma'arer. That's how the Rashbam, the Ramban, the Ritva, that's how they all explain the Gemara's kasha. kasha that the Gemara is asking, why does the Braisa make such a convoluted case? The Braisa instead should have had it less complicated, where Reuven, who stole it, did not sell it to a third party. Reuven was still holding on to it. The problem with that explanation is the lashon of velukma begazlan. Velukma means let us establish it, which would mean let us say that the Braisa is actually talking about this case, not let us let the Braisa not talk about what it did talk about it, and instead talk about this case, meaning we're not asking on the lashon velukma sounds like we're not asking on the Braisa itself. Why did the Braisa talk about A? Let the Braisa talk about B. It sounds like we're asking on Rav Sheshes' explanation of the Braisa. Why would Rav Sheshes explain the Braisa this way? Let him explain the Braisa another way. The problem is that it's hard to say that. It's hard to say that the Kasha is on Rav Sheshes, because Rav Sheshes did say it's talking about a Gazlan. He just added in the Braisa itself. Gave the case. I'm sorry, Rav Sheshes did say something about a Gazlan, but he just added in the Machra Lelevi. So there are those that change the girsa. Ihachi Lisni Gezel. Let it say Gezel instead of Lukma Begazlan. But anyway, so assuming that this is the Kasha, that the Braisa could have made a less complicated case, why didn't it make a less complicated case? Because the Braisa does want to still introduce the Seifa. Namely, that machar lo para, machar lo talis, that if you sell a para or you sell a talis, then you're allowed to be made, that it belongs to the person and not to the party that's being ma'arer. Tedafka machar. Now, in that case, you need to say that there was a mechira, that Reuven, who stole it, then sold it to Levi. Because in that case, when Yehuda, the ma'arer, comes and claims that it belongs to him, Shimon, the nigzal, it can be made for Levi that it does not belong to Yehuda. Because if the object were to stay by Levi, Shimon is not going to be able to benefit from it anyway. He's not going to be able to take it away from Levi. So that's why he's not a Nogea Be'edos. So you need that third party in that case in order to make Shimon not a Nogea Be'edos. Why? Because you would have a situation where the original owner was Miyaish when the item was originally stolen from him. When Reuven stole from Shimon, Shimon had Yeush, and then there was a Shine Rishos, because Reuven then sold it to Levi. And the halacha is that the Bailam is not able to be Motzi Miyado once there's already Yeush and Shine Rishos. So since Shimon is not going to be able to take it away from Levi anyway, because there already was Yeush and Shine Rishos, so that's why he's not going to be considered a Nogea Be'edus. Avalomachar. But if Reuven never sold it to Levi, the Hadrele, then the object can be returned back to the original owner, to Shimon, then Shimon cannot be made on the object, because he still can retrieve it from Levi. So then he still would be Nogea Be'edus. The Rashbam writes that the case that we're talking about, where it was Machar, where the object is sold, is Dafka Shaloba Achrayus. That it must be that when Reuven sold it to Levi, Reuven sold it Shaloba Achrayus. And Tosus explains, the Dibra Maskel Dafka, why is it that we have to say that Reuven sold it to Levi Shaloba Achrayus? Because if we're talking about where Reuven sold it to Levi with Achrayus, then Nigzal is considered Nogea Be'edus, and he would not be able to testify for the Lokech. Meaning, Shimon would be considered Nogea Be'edus, he would not be able to testify for Levi. Because even if there was Yeush and Shina Rishus, Shimon is still going to be able to take the object away from Levi, because Levi won't lose from that, because Levi can always just turn him around to Reuven and get reimbursed from Reuven. So that's why I want to say that it's Dafka Shaloba Achrayus. That's what makes Levi not a Nogea Be'edus, because that's what makes Shimon rather not a Nogea Be'edus, that he's not going to be able to take it away from Levi anyway, because if he does try to take it away from Levi, Levi is going to lose from that from Shimon taking it away from him. Now, the reason that Yehuda, who's the Ma'arer, is able to be Motzi from Levi, meaning Lechora, once you're saying that, what's Yehuda claiming? Yehuda's coming to Beis and saying, no, this talis, this para belongs to me. Well, we all know that Reuven had it at some point, and we all know that Reuven sold it to Levi. So all Yehuda's claiming is, Reuven didn't steal it from Shimon, Reuven stole it from me. That's Yehuda's whole taina. So wait a second. The reason that Shimon is not a Nogea Be'edos is because there was Yeush and Shina Rishus, which means Shimon can't get it back. Why can't he get it back? Someone stole it from him, and then there was a subsequent Shina Rishus. So what's Yehuda's taina? Yehuda's saying it was stolen from me, and then there was a Shina Rishus. So why would he be able to get it back? How could Yehuda come to... What's Yehuda's case when he's coming to court? He's saying that I'm in the exact same position that Shimon claims he's in. Well, that position is not enough to be able to get the item back. So what kind of error is there that Yehuda has in the first place? So that's what the Achronim point out. You have to say that we're talking about that only Shimon was Miyaish, that Yehuda was never Miyaish. Shimon, we know, was Miyaish Beferush. So then you have a Yeush followed by a Shina Rishus. But Yehuda claims, I was never Miyaish. I never gave up hope on it. So even though Reuven stole it from me, there was no Yeush at that point. So yes, there was a Shina Rishus. Reuven then sold it to Levi. But if there was no Yeush, then I still get it back. So that's why Yehuda actually has a claim. So says Gemara, if the Seifa is talking about a parah and a talis that was stolen, and we're trying to say that you're not a nogea b'davar, Gemara says the Seifa nami, even in the Seifa by the parah of the talis where it was sold to somebody else, why is Shimon allowed to be made for Levi? Shimon again was the nigzal, the one who was originally stolen from. Why is he allowed to be made that it should belong to Levi the lokeach? Nihidim yaish megufei midame mimi yaish. Granted, he may have been miyayish from ever getting back the item itself because it was stolen from him. He doesn't think he's ever going to see it again. But is he mochel Reuven the money? If Reuven is definitely chayiv him to pay the value of the object, so certainly he's no geir bedavar to be made that the object should stay by Levi and not go to Yehuda the Ma'arer so that he can get the money back from Reuven. You see, if it goes to Yehuda the Ma'arer, then it will. That's essentially acknowledging that it never ever belonged to Shimon, that Reuven had stolen it from Yehuda. So you can give up on any possibility of ever getting reimbursed. Shimon give up on any possibility of ever getting reimbursed from Reuven because we're essentially concluding that it was never stolen from Shimon. But if Shimon is made that it belongs to Levi, that Reuven had sold it to Levi, so granted Shimon knows he's not going to get the object back, but he should still be able to get the money back. Now it's true, Reuven could be doche him and say that there are shnei kitei edim asosim zezeh. You know, I'm somech on the edim of Yehuda, and therefore I don't owe you anything. But nevertheless, Reuven might come to some sort of pshara with Shimon, since Shimon and Yehuda could write a shtar hasha'a with each other to be tovea Reuven. So Reuven is motivated to want to come to some sort of agreement with Shimon, and therefore Shimon will still at least be able to get something. He would still be able to get money. So the Gemara is asking, how can you say Shimon is not a nogea be'edus? Granted, he's not a nogea be'edus as far as the object itself, but he is most certainly in Ogea Be'edus as far as the money is concerned, because he does want to get back his money. So says Gemara Lo Tzricha, the case of the Brisa of the Parah or the Talus that you're allowed to be made on it is Demis Gazlan, that the Gazlan died and he doesn't have any karkaos that the Nigzal can collect his payment from. So then the Nigzal is Miyayish not only on the object, he's Miyayish on the money as well. So he's not able to take it from the Lokeach because the Lokeach was Kona B'Yeush V'Shina Rishos. The Yorshe HaGazlan are Pater from paying. They don't have to pay anything to Tanan because the Mishnah tells us HaGoza L'machil Esbanav V'Niach L'Fneim P'turim Yilashalim. If a person steals and gives his children that which he stole, or someone dies and he leaves the Gezela for his children, they are putter from paying it back. The Yorshim don't have to pay back that which their father stole. So the Nigzal could be made for the Lokeach, that the Parah, the Talus, belongs to the Lokeach against Yehuda, the Ma'arer, and he's not Nogea B'davar because the Nigzal has no chance of getting it back anyway. Now, when one is Ma'achil Esban of the Chiddush that his children are putter, is even though, meaning what, we give two cases over here where the children don't have to pay back the father's Gzela. One is Ma'achil Esban of and the other one is hiniach lifnehem. Machlas banav is that they actually benefited from the gzela. Hiniach lifnehem is that it's still there, it's still in the estate, but that they didn't actually benefit from it. So the chiddush by machlas banav is that even though they themselves benefited from the gzela, but they still don't have to pay back because they didn't steal anything. And we have to say that they used it up after the bailim originally was miyayish. Before the yayish, the gzela is still in the rishus habailim, and if they used it up at that point, then they become the gazlanim, and they would have to pay for it. So if the gazlan dies, if you hold rishus yoresh, is k'rishus lokeach, that the rishus of the yorshim is considered a shina rishus, the yorshim don't have to pay, even if they still have the gzela, because they were kona b'yayish rishina rishus. But if you're going to hold this, we're going to see, the Gemara is going to play it out, if you're going to hold that rishus yoresh is not rishus lokeach, then you have to say that the yorshim already used it up, it no longer exists, and they're put from paying because they didn't actually steal anything. There's a whole discussion about what a child has to do for kavod of the father. If the father had stolen something, the Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia discusses about returning that which the father had stolen as a form of kibud av, to do what he would have been responsible to do. And the Gemara makes very clear that a child is obligated in kibud av when the father is not a rasha. If the father is a rasha, then they don't have to return the gzelas aviyam mishum kibud aviyam. It would only be that they would have to do it if the father had done tshuva. What do you mean he did tshuva? If he did tshuva, why would he still have the stolen items? So the Gemara says he was about to return it, and then he had a massive heart attack, got hit by a truck, something happened, he was about to return it, and then he died. And that would be a case where the father did tshuva, but he didn't have an opportunity to see it through. That's where there would be a din of kibud av. So now the Gemara asks Rav Sheshes, why does the Braisa have to be teaching? Rav Sheshes again has said that the case of the Braisa is this convoluted case, where what happened? Shimon was the original owner. Reuven stole it from him. Reuven sold it to Levi. Now Yehuda is coming and he's claiming that it's actually his. So the reason that we said that he had to come up with that whole convoluted case is because of the safe of the Braisa of the Talis and the Para, where you're allowed to be made. So you need that third party involved in order to be allowed to be made, so that you could have a Yeush Vashina Rishus, where you know you're not going to get it back anyway. Ask the Gemara of Sheshes, Velukma B'Yoresh, why doesn't the Braisa just say it's hold in a case where the Sada is in the Gazlan's possession, and he did not sell it to anyone else, rather he simply just died, and he was Morish it to his children. So why does the Braisa have to be Dochek and explain the din about it? He stole it and sold it to someone else, come up with this whole third party of Levi, and then the Gazlan dies? You could just say the same din if the Gazlan dies without the third party. So he steals it, he dies, and he's Morish the Gzela to his child. Reuven stole the field from Shimon. Reuven dies. Now his son is Levi, not a Lokeach. Levi's not a Lokeach. Levi is Reuven's son. And Yehuda's Ma'ar on the field that it belongs to him. So the halacha is that Shimon is not able to testify that Levi owns the field, because he's going to be considered Nogea Be'edos, because he'd rather the field remain in Levi's possession, so that later he'll be able to bring Rios that it was stolen from him, and he'll be able to get it back from Levi. But if Yehuda gets possession of the field from Levi, then Shimon will not be able to come with Rios afterwards to get it back from him, because they're both going to have Edim. And the Chum say, whenever you have a Safek in Din, what to do with the Karka, leave it, be out of Machzik, leave it by the person who has it right now, and it's going to be in Yehuda's possession, and therefore Shimon's going to be up a creek, he's going to have nothing to do. So that's where the Braisa is going to say, yeah, but in the Seifa, where Reuven stole a talis or a para from Shimon and he dies, and Levi, his son, yarshened it, Shimon can be made for Levi against Yehuda the Ma'arer, since he's no longer Nogea B'davar, because he's not able to be to get it back from Levi anyway, because that would be a case of Yeush Bailim by the Gazlan, and Shinu Rishus in the hands of the Yoresh, and you're not able to be Tovei it anyway. So says Maria, Hani Chalamad Yom Rishus Yoresh, Lav K'Rishus Lokech Tami Shapir. If you hold that Rishus Yoresh is not K'Rishus Lokech, which means that when Reuven dies and passes it on to his son Levi, that's not considered Shina Rishus, so then I understand why the Braisa needs to make Levi a Lokech over here. That it has to be that Reuven sold it to Levi, and not that Reuven yarshined it to Levi. Because that's the only way you have an actual case of Shina Rishus. El But if you hold like the Shita, the Rishus Yoresh is Rishus Lokeach, is like the Rishus of Lokeach, which means that it is considered Rishina Rishus when you Yarshin it, why doesn't the Brisa just say that that's the case, that Reuven had stolen it from Shimon and Yarshined it to Levi instead of Reuven selling it from Shimon and selling it to Levi? That Machlokas of Rishus Yoresh Rishus Lokeach is a Machlokas in Baba Kama Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, that some hold Rishus Yoresh is not Rishus Lokeach, a Gazlan who's Morish Gzela to his children, it's not considered Rishina Rishus, and they explain that HaGozel Yiniach Lefnei Pturim Milashalim, in a case where they already used up the Gzela is not there anymore, but if the Gzela were actually there, they would be Chayiv to return it, even though there was Yeush, because there was no Shina Rishus, and some hold that no, Rishus Yoresh is Rishus Lokeach, it's a Shina Rishus, and even if the Gzela is still Kayim, the children would be Pater from giving it back, because there was already a Yeush and a Shina Rishus. And then another kasha on how Rav Sheshes explained the Brisa. Vod kasha leila Abaye. Abaye asked Vaiter on Rav Sheshes. According to Rav Sheshes, who explained the Brisa, that Reuven stole it from Shimon, sold it to Levi, the lashon of the Brisa of Ein Meid Lo Aleha, Mipnei Sha'achriyuso Alav, that the Nigzal has Achrayus, and a Zuchus, and someone who's made for him, that the Nigzal is ultimately going to take it away from the Lokeach. So that's what makes him Nogea Be'edus, Mepresha Achriyus Olav, Ve'en Achriyus Olav. Does it really have to do with whether he has Achriyus or not? We don't find anywhere that Achriyus Olav means the Lokeach. The Achriyus Olav always means the Mocher. Mepresha Chozeres Lo Ve'en Chozeres Lo Mibayilei. The real point, the way the Rav Sheshes is explaining the Brisa, is will Shimon ever be able to get it back, or will he not be able to get it back? So it's not Achriyus Olav that's the issue. The issue is Chozeres Lo, or not Chozeres Lo. So the lashon of the Brisa doesn't seem to fit perfectly in Rav Sheshes' explanation. So instead, the Gemara is going to suggest a different explanation of the Brisa. Ella k'deravin bar Shmuel. The Reish of the Brisa is coming to teach us the din of Ravin bar Shmuel. Dama Ravin bar Shmuel, Meshmei de Shmuel, Hamocher sadu lechaveru shelo ba'achrayus. If a person sells a field to somebody else that was meshubah to a balchov and he was not mekabel any achrayus, the mocher was not mekabel any achrayus, meaning, I'm selling you a field and if it gets taken away from you, tough luck. I'm not going to reimburse you. You cannot come back to me and take anything from me. So if the Ma'ar comes and claims that the field is his, Ein Meid Lo Aleha. The Mocher cannot be mitzarif with another aid to be Meid that the field belongs to this Kona. Because by being Meid that it belongs to that Kona, any Balchov of the Mocher can now come take it away from that Kona, from that Lokeach. And I want that to happen. I want a Balchov. If I have a Balchov, I want him to have where to collect from. So I want him to be able to go to you to take the field from you. I lose because you're going to turn around to me. No, I sold it without Achrayus, so I've taken away your ability to turn around and take it from me. The Gemara is going to explain in tomorrow's daf that we're talking about when the mocher doesn't have any other fields, and that's why he's nogea be'edus, because he doesn't want to be a lover rush of lo yishalim. He wants his balchov to be able to collect from somewhere. But legabe lokeach, the mocher is not considered a lover rush because he's not worried about his reputation, because he dafka said him selling it to you shelo b'achrayus. The lokeach should have realized that he's taking a significant risk by buying it shelo b'achrayus. That's the way the Rashbam understands. So the way the Brisa would be understood according to what we're saying right now is machalo bayis, machalo sada, a lover that has karka that's meshuba to a balchov, and he sells that karka to a lokeach, and a ma'arer claims that karka belongs to him. The mocher is not allowed to keep that field, to be made that field belongs to the guy he sold it to. Mipnei she'achriyuso alav. What does mipnei she'achriyuso alav? Because the achrayus of the balchov is something that's on the mocher's mind. It's something that the mocher still has, that he wants his own balchov to be able to collect that karka. And that's why he's considered nogea bedavar. He'd like that karka to stay by the lokeach so that the balchov will be able to collect from it. V'dafka bayis osada, but that's only if it's a house or a field. Aval para v'talis, but if it were a para and a talis that were bought shelo b'achrayus, and someone comes and claims that para and the talis, the mocher can be made on that para and the talis, because ein achrayus olav, meaning that there's no achrayus of the bal chov on the mocher to collect that chov from the metaltalim. So he's not considered nogea b'davar. Why is it that the bal chov wouldn't be able to collect from that metaltalim? Lomi bayi b'stama, not only in the case where it was sold stam, where he was maldim stam, where he was not miyachid the parah of the talis specifically, as this is something you can collect from, where certainly the metaltim does not become mishub the balchov, my time metaltim in the metaltim balchov lo mishtabdi, and that's obvious because it's metaltim, and the rule is metaltim is never mishub to balchov, and the reason it's never mishub to balchov is because there's no kol. So the whole idea of having a shibud is that the people who buy it should have done their research, they should have investigated, and they should have realized that it's very risky that a balchov might come, that this guy may have balichovus who are going to come and collect it from them, but a metaltim doesn't have a kol, so no one would ever find out about it. There is, and therefore it's not considered something that they were irresponsible about. So because if metaltim was shubut to balchov, no one would ever buy metaltim from anybody else. So that's obvious. Because metaltim balchov lo mishtabdi v'yafagav the kasav lei migli medal kaspe. And even though he writes the lashon that we write in our ksubas, that he can collect the chov even from his begadim that he's wearing, hani mili disnu beinayu. Yeah, when I say that I owe you money and you can collect even from my clothing, it doesn't mean after I sold my clothing. It means miglima the al kaspe, from the shirt off my back, from what I actually still have. Avalisnu beinayu. But if he doesn't have it anymore, lo, then certainly he's not allowed to collect the chov. So that's certainly the part of the talis would not be meshubatu bal chov. He's not going to be able to take it from the lokeach. So then it's a davar pashut that the mocher is allowed to testify for the lokeach, because the mocher stands to benefit nothing from the lokeach keeping it. Elafilu aso apotiki. No, but the chiddush is, even if he made it an apotiki, the love wrote to the malva, if I don't pay back your chov by a certain time, this para, this talis, is what you could collect from. Right? Apotiki is apa tehei ka'i, that from this will be your payment. That's a natrikin. So namilo, still it's not meshubah to the bal chov, and he's not able to collect his chov from them because he had sold it. So my taima, why is it that if I made it an apotiki, I said this is where you can collect your chov from, why is it that he can't collect his chov from there? Kidarava. Because like Rava explained, Amar Rava, Asa Avdo Apotiki, if a person was miyachid as Eved, as an Apotiki, Umacharo, and then he later sold that Eved, Balchov Govim Menu. Yes, the Balchov can still go back and collect that Eved even though it's been sold. But Shoro, the Chamaro Apotiki, Umacharo, Ein Balchov Govei Menu. If what he sold was not an Evet, what he sold was a Shor or a Chamar, then the Balchov cannot go collect from that Shor and Chamar if it's already been sold. My time, what's the difference between an Evet versus a Shor and a Chamar? Very simply, Hai Isleikala, Vaha Lasleikala. When you're Miyachid an Evet for a Balchov to collect the Chov, there's a call and everyone's going to know about it. The Ritva explains, because it's an Evet is a Dover Masuyam. Everyone knows that person is this guy's Eved. By a shor, you know, people don't name their shvarim. You know, it's not like everyone knows this shor, that shor. An ox is an ox, you know, it's not. But an Eved has more of an individual identity. So since he has an individual identity, everyone knows that that's, so that it creates more of a kol. The Rush in the Tshuva says, no, the Eved himself will be mavir the kol. The shor is not going to tell anybody that he was made an apotiki, but the eved might tell other people. So therefore, the eved might serve as a kol. So the lekuchas should have known when they bought that eved to be very careful. So when they bought that eved, they were mafsidim al atzmam. But when you miyachid a shor chamar to the balchov, so it doesn't have a kol. So the lekuchas had no way to know that to be careful not to buy this, and therefore you're not allowed to collect from those lekuchas because they were innocent. They didn't do anything wrong. They didn't fail to investigate anything. No investigation would have turned anything up anyway. So in the case of the Braisa, it was a para, it was a talus. They're not meshubah to a balchov, even if they were made into an apotiki, and therefore the mocher could be made for the benefit of the lokeach, that it actually belongs to the lokeach, because the mocher is not going to benefit anything from keeping it in the hands of the lokeach. So Gemara asks, well, why by a part of a talus? We don't understand by a part of a talus why he's allowed to be made on it, because granted, it's true that metaltim are not meshubah shibut ubalchov, but v'leichosh dilma akni le metalteli agav mekarkai. Shouldn't we have to be choshish that maybe the mocher was maknet to the balchov this metaltelim agav karka that was meshubut to him in order that he should be able to collect the chov from them? Because we do find that you're able to be meshabin metaltelim if you pull off that trick, if you're maknet the metaltelim agav the karka. Damer Rabba, I akni le metalteli agav mekarkai. If you're maknet to the balchov metaltelim agav karka that's meshubut to him to collect from that metaltelim, kani mekarkai. Since the karka becomes meshubad, in that case the metaltelim can become meshubad as well. So vamar of chista v'udakasav lei delokas machta delokatovsa d'shtari. That only works if you write in the shtar that you're being meshabi the metaltelim agav the karka, not as nasmachta bialma, as a real shibud, and the shtar is not just made as a model shtar, but not to collect with. No, it's a real shtar, not ketofse d'shtari. This isn't just a shtar form. This is an actual shtar. So you have to be explicit that you're being totally serious about it, that it's not kasmachta, not ketofse d'shtari. But if you do actually make such a kinyan in the shtar that the metaltelin is agav li karka, then the metaltelin, in fact, does become meshubad. Now, what's this idea that delok hasmachta? Hasmachta is when you say if this doesn't happen, then I promise you the world. So we know that you're not really promising him the world. You just assume that something is going to happen. So that's the lashon of hasmachta, that he's masmich. He's saying you can rely on me because look, I'm promising you the world. But he doesn't actually intend to promise him the world. So you have to say delok hasmachta. You have to be explicit that. That it's not kasmachta. The reason you have to be explicit is because it's not a mechira gemura, it's a shibud. So if it's a mechira gemura and you're making a kinyan, there's no doubt that you could be kona metaltelin agav karka. That's a kinyan agav. That works. But over here, you're not really selling him anything. You're just saying that I know I owe you money. Should I not have the cash when you want to collect the money and you want to collect from this metaltelin? So there's a shibud on this metaltelin. So it's not an actual full fledged kinyan. That's how the Rashbam explains over here. The Ritva writes that there is somewhat of an asmachta over here, but it's not an asmachta gemura because he's only being meshabi to pay what he actually owes. See, most cases of asmachta are some sort of exaggeration that if I don't come up with the money, then I'll pay 10 times that money, something like that, or some reason why something that really you shouldn't be obligated to pay. Oh, if that football team wins this game, then I'll pay you $1,000. Why? Why would you do that? That seems like, meaning there's no actual transaction. There's nothing that you actually owe. But over here, it's not really like an asmachta, the Ritva points out. It's not exactly an asmachta because I actually do owe you the money. It's just a question of how I'm going to pay you back the money. So it's not a typical type of asmachta, but still you need to be explicit that it's not kasmachta, not ketofsi d'shtari. So since even metaltelin in such a case, that the lov is meshabe the agav the karka would become meshubet to the balchov and he'll be able to collect from it even if he sells it to someone else, so then we should have to be choshesh that this mocher who sold his para and his talis to a balchov maybe did so agav the karka, so there is a toelis for the mocher, for the one who sold the para and the talis, for to have the lokach keep it so that he'll be able to collect his chov. So why is he allowed to be made on it? He's no geah bedavar. So says Gemara, Hachmaiskinan, Goshalaka Chumachar the altar. The Bryson must be talking about that he's able to be made on the part of the talus that he sold to somebody else, where right away he was shown to the part of the talus, right in front of us, he sold it to somebody else. And therefore he could be made on it because there was no loan in between where it could have been Meshubad. Meaning what happened? Ruvain took the para and the talus, and immediately he sold it to somebody else without having time to create any sort of shibud on it, because you can only have a shibud if that stuff was in his possession at the time that he went into debt, at the time that he owed somebody money. But we know that didn't happen. We should still be choshesh that maybe the halva'a that the lova we should still be choshesh that the halva'a that the mocher borrowed before he was cut of the parah of the talis, he was mishabi to the malva agav the karka any nuchasim. Not only that the ikni, but the shasrani liknos, and that he was mishabi even metaltlin that he did not yet own that shasrani liknos from this day forward. And it turns out that as soon as he purchased that parah, as soon as he purchased that talis, it did become mishuba to the balchov. So again, we're back to the question: why can the mocher be made for the lokeach on it? After all, he's no geabadavar that parah or the talis should stay by the lokeach so that his balchov would be able to collect from it. So shamit mina, must be that what you can see from here is the ikni kana, that if you're mishabidim the chasim that you're going to be kona. So if he's kona the chasim umachar kona vahorish lo mishtabed, and then you're kona and you sell, or you're kona and you're morish, it doesn't work. It's not the shibud doesn't carry forward. A person cannot be makne l'chavero something that's lo baliyada. That's what Rashbam explains. You can't be makne something to somebody else that which you don't have. But if the nechasim were in the reshus of the lova, then in a chinami they would really be meshubed. So the Gemara, in fact, now goes back from the teretz that we said before of lakach umachal lialter and says no, the Brisa is talking about something else. Lo tzricha, the Brisa doesn't have to say that he could be made for him, and we're not choshesh that you meshabed the metaltim mag of the karka to kamri edim yadin bebahai to lav le'arame olam. The case must be that we know that he doesn't have land. Meaning, our whole kasha was, shouldn't he still be nogeya be'edus? Maybe this para, this talis, was meshubah to a balchov. How could it possibly be meshubah to balchov? It's metaltan. Oh, it's agav karka that it became meshubah to a balchov. We know that he never owned a piece of land. So if we know that he never owned a piece of land, that's why it's meshubah to, that's why we know it's not meshubah to a balchov. Tosus points out, lo havale arme olam, can you have such a thing? That a Jew who never owns any land, he says, mikan tshuva la omrim. He says, this is a response, says Tosus, to those who say, "Demashenagu lichtov bar shos v'nasati lo arba amos b'chatzeri afagav d'les lekarka." That right as a lashon of the shtar, I'm giving 4 amos of my chatzer, even though they don't own any karka at all. Why do they write that? Because they claim mishum dein lecha adam shein lo arba amos b'eretz Yisrael the karka in l'gzelas. They say that every Jew has 4 amos in Eretz Yisrael. Inami dein lecha adam shein lo dalar amos l'kavro. Every person is going to have dalar amos where he's going to be buried. So, because it doesn't sound that way from this Gemara, our Gemara sounds like it's possible that a person doesn't have karka. So this is a tshuva to those who say that that every Jew always automatically has karka, that everyone has dalet amos in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, in the tshuvas of a couple of the achronim, the tshuvas lahoros nasan, in other tshuvas, they discuss the possibility they rejected in tshuvas mechzal Avram. It was asked that according to this idea that every Jew has karka in Eretz Yisrael, so if you grow a lulav and esrog in Eretz Yisrael, maybe you should never be able to yotze the mitzvah because it's not lechem. That originally that was someone else's dalet amos, and it was just mitzgal gal adavr that somehow you have it right now, but it's really stolen property the whole time. So they all reject that. They say, no, first of all, Tosus is saying that that's not true, that not everyone has the karka in Eretz Yisrael. Plus, there are many, many other reasons not to reject it. Even if it did belong to someone else, he wants you to be able to do the mitzvah, nichle l'nishlov, mitzvah b'monei, etc. Okay, so the Gemara asks, v'am rav papa, alf gav dam rabbanim, even though the rabbanim say, mocher sod el chaveru shalom achrayus, that if someone sells a field to his friend without a chrayus, u'ba balchov v'trofa, and the balchov comes and takes the field, Eino chozer lavi, the lokeach is not allowed to go to the mocher and claim it. Nimtzei sheina shelo, but if it turns out that the field never belonged to the mocher, Adam came and told us that the mocher had stolen it and it never belonged to him, chozer lav, then the lokeach can be tovea from the mocher, even though he sold it shelo ba'achrayus. So if that's the case, when you sell a paro or a talus and the ma'ara claims that it belongs to him, the mocher should still be nogea be'edus, because if the paro goes to the Ma'arer, who claims that it's his, it goes to Yehuda, it turns out that it was that the Mocher had stolen it. And if the Mocher had stolen it, then you're always allowed to go back to the Mocher and ask for your money back. So, now the Bryce is talking about B'makir Bashi Hi Bas chamorim. The lokeach realizes this para is the offspring of the para of the mocher, and he admits that in front of Eidim that it was not stolen. So once he's being moda that he recognized that this talis actually belongs to the mocher, talisim don't have offspring, but he admits that it belongs to the mocher. So even though the ma'ar is going to come and he's going to bring Eidi Sheker and he's going to be motzi the para from the lokeach with a taina that it belongs to him, the lokeach will not be able to go back to the mocher and be tovea, because the lokeach was already moda that it belonged to the mocher. Now hodas baldin is kameya edim dami. So there is not going to be since the lokeach is not able to be tovea the mocher. It turns out the mocher is not an ogea be'edos. Rav Zvid disagrees. Rav Zvid amar, even though the lokeach is not makir this para that it belonged to the mocher, still the mocher could be made for the lokeach against the ma'arer, and he's not considered an ogea be'edos, because the din that someone who sells a field to his friend shelo ba'achrayis afilu nimtzei sheino shelo eino chozer lav. The din is that even if it turns out that it never belonged to him, still the lokeach can't go back to the mocher. Because the mocher could say, why do you think I sold it to you shelo ba'achrayis? I sold it to you shelo ba'achrayis, so that you will never have any taina whatsoever. So even if right now you're claiming that it never belonged to me and that I stole it, too bad. That's why I sold it to you shelo ba'achrayis. That's what my entire thinking was. Okay, Be'el Shem, tomorrow we'll pick up with Gufa at the bottom.